Welcome back to TechNet Radio. Microsoft MVP Mitch Garvis is back on the show, and in today's no-holds-barred session, we're giving a serious look at VMware versus the Microsoft Private Cloud. Tune in as we give a Just the Facts MAM overview of the key differences between each of their virtualization offerings, management tools, certification exams, as well as a clear answer to the big question in the room, does virtualization equal a private cloud? John, the mic is yours.
Hello and welcome to today's TechNet Radio Community Corner. I'm John Weston with Microsoft, and today I've got Mitch Garvis with me. Welcome, Mitch.
It's always great to be back, John. Thanks for having me.
As you said, you're back for a second episode. We recorded a previous episode with him back in December. So why don't you remind folks what your MVP area is in?
Well, I am an MVP in Windows Expert IT Pro, which is at the same time very ego-boosting. I'm an expert. And it's not very descriptive. I do a lot of things surrounding the client and server, but the MVP category is all around the client. So I'm a member, I'm a charter member, I should say, of the Springboard Technical Experts Panel, which is the brainchild of Stephen Rose and bringing the entire, bringing all of the resources of TechNet learning Windows to the masses. So I speak to a lot of groups every year, but that's not all I do. I also spend a lot of time talking about server and Active Directory, and especially a subject near and dear to both of our hearts, virtualization and the private cloud.
That's great. Yeah, last time we talked a lot about virtualization in the Microsoft private cloud. The reason I wanted to bring you back another time is I recently got my VMware certification. Yeah, that's right. A Microsoft guy went and passed the VCP5 test. And I know you're also VMware certified. And so let's talk about that a little bit. I know VMware is in the virtualization space, and as is Microsoft in that. But before we dive into the, you know, the big comparisons, let's just first talk some basics. I know Microsoft has a hypervisor, so does VMware. Why don't you give us those that may not be familiar with virtualization a little bit of basics before we get into some of the details?
Well, sure. A hypervisor is a virtualization platform, and there are two types of hypervisors. More people are probably familiar with are the layer 2 hypervisors. Those are the virtual PC, virtual server 2005 R2. VMware Workstation and VMware Player. On the Mac side, we've got Fusion and Parallels. Those are platforms that you install an operating system, and then you run the virtualization layer on top of the operating system as a service. So the OS is going to be the master of the universe, as it were. It controls all of the resources and allocates them out as it sees fit, rather than by the need of the virtual machine. Then we have a layer 1 hypervisor, and that's really another word for an operating system. The hypervisor for Hyper-V and VMware's ESXi are bare metal installs on top of the hardware, and we install our virtual partitions right on top of that. And that really makes it a lot easier, because the comparison I like to make is a condo versus a rented apartment. In a rented apartment, you live in your unit and you're paying for that unit. But if the elevator breaks down, you can write as many complaints as you want. The bottom line is, until the landlord sees fit to fix it, it's his elevator. In a condo, if you live in a unit with 16 units, then you actually own 1/16 of the elevator, and nobody can take that away from you. Not the landlord, not anybody. It's yours. So with the hypervisor, if you have a virtual machine that has, let's say, 2 gigabytes of RAM, that RAM belongs to you, and it makes performance a lot better. Now, there's a misunderstanding in the world that Hyper-V, because it's installed as a role on top of Windows Server, they say, hey, this is a layer 2 hypervisor. We installed the operating system, then we install the hypervisor.
But
what
it does,
and I wrote a great article about this, it lifts the operating system up off the foundation and injects the layer 1 hypervisor right onto the bare metal and compresses the parent partition or the original operating system into what I call a para-virtual machine, where it's running in a virtual machine, but it looks like it's running on the hardware. It doesn't need... It doesn't use VHDs or virtual hard disk files. It looks like it's running on the virtual machine. It manages all of the resources, but it doesn't actually control all of the resources.
All right, that's a great base explanation of all of this. And so beyond just the virtualization and the hypervisor layer, I mean, obviously, they sounds like Microsoft's and VMware's are pretty comparable there. Let's talk about management. I mean, obviously, we have to have tools to manage all this virtualization, and lots of different servers are running on the same machines.
Absolutely. And, you know, what I always tell people is that I mean, we have all sorts of slides. Both Microsoft and VMware have all sorts of slides that say virtualization is going to simplify your management experience. And well, while it may be simplified in so far as you're going to have 10 pieces of hardware instead of 100 pieces of hardware or whatever number you're going to have, if you have 100 servers and one of them goes down because of a fan, okay, you're going to have to scramble to replace that fan and get the hardware back up and running. But if you have 100 virtual machines running on one piece of hardware and that piece of hardware goes down, you're going to have a really bad day before you even get out of bed. So it is so much more vital to monitor and manage the hardware that you have. And of course, on the VMware side, we have the vCenter server, and Microsoft has the entire System Center family of products. Now, the difference between the two is that whether you are virtual or physical, you're probably using a tool like System Center Operations Manager to monitor your environment and create reports. You're probably using System Center Configuration Manager to manage the lifestyle of your entire server farm and environment. In VMware, the vCenter server, and let's face it, it's a difficult comparison to make because although they do the same thing on the virtualization layer, if you install vCenter server, chances are you still need System Center Ops Manager and Config Manager to monitor your operating systems within the virtual machines. Whereas in the System Center stack, we have the System Center Virtual Machine Manager, which works great on its own, but its functionality is so much more improved when we have Operations Manager and the PRO tips, and we have the Config Manager managing and monitoring and scripting the lifecycle and System Center Orchestrator and all of those great tools that we can pick and choose what we need to monitor our environment. And you know what? With the exception of VMM, if you go with VMware and with vCenter Server, you're still going to need the System Center products because vCenter Server does a great job of monitoring the hypervisor. Don't get me wrong. It monitors your virtual hosts and it monitors the hardware. But you still need to monitor your operating systems. You still need to monitor and manage your applications within an operating system and all of that. And you still need the System Center line. Now, VMM, as I said, is probably the least expensive component of the whole System Center stack, which is funny because even if we bought the entire System Center stack, we're still not spending as much money on a per server basis as we would have to if we're running vCenter Server without System Center.
Yeah, that's great. Great explanation there. Now I've heard from VMware that if you're running VMware, therefore you are running a private cloud. Or basically, I guess what they're trying to say is if you have their virtualization products, therefore you're running a private cloud. So does just virtualization make a private cloud?
Well, that's a very difficult statement. I mean, the cloud is difficult not only for the complexity, but because it's so hard to put your fingers on. I mean, it's not so much that it's vapor, but it is that very real cloud. There's a great quote from a U.S. Senate hearing several years ago where somebody said, "I can't define pornography for you, but I know it when I see it." Well, what makes a private cloud? I don't know, but when I see it, I know what it is. And let's be clear. The cloud has become a real buzzword over the last 2, maybe 3 years, but it's not new. I mean, the cloud has been around for as long as you've had a Hotmail account. The cloud means your servers are somewhere that you can't touch. Well, if you work at an office and your data center is on the third floor and you work in the fifth, sure, whether it's physical or virtual, it's a cloud. So virtualization absolutely helps with the cloud, but is it the cloud itself? I would say that if you were to deploy all of your servers, Exchange, that's a cloud product. SharePoint, that's a cloud product. SQL, how many of your end users directly touch your SQL? They may touch a database on your SQL, but it's a cloud product. So no, the virtualization doesn't make a cloud. It facilitates it.
Yep, and I totally agree with that. I mean, you got to have more than just the virtualization. It's about automation and self-service and templates and all of that other components that make up the private cloud. So you mentioned earlier application management. So I've got virtualization. I have guest operating systems running on my server. And inside of those servers, I've got all these applications running. Do I really need to manage those apps? I'm an IT pro, or I thought that was the developer's problem.
If you know a thing or two about patch management, you'll know that it's very important. Microsoft develops some great and secure applications and incredible operating systems, but they also keep finding security flaws in them. Now, Microsoft is not the worst offender of the group, but every application developer has security flaws and release periodic patches. Now, Windows 7 and Windows Server 2008 R2 are rock solid secure, but once in a while we find a security vulnerability. It's interesting to note that the people who find this security vulnerability, I think it's somewhere above 95%, are discovered by Microsoft, and Microsoft releases the patches to plug those holes. Well, they don't send those patches only to people that they like. They make them available to everyone. So if you have a patch for SQL Server, and okay, I don't think it's necessary to patch my SQL Server. Well, the hacker, whether he's in Toronto or Kazakhstan, gets the patch too, reverse engineers it and sees what flaws and what security holes the patch patches, says, you know what? I know that John down in Texas isn't as up to speed on patching his applications and operating systems because he thinks that's a developer's problem. I now have a way into his systems. If you look, you want the greatest example of all time, the SQL Slammer virus, going back a decade, and people haven't learned. SQL Slammer compromised 100,000 SQL servers in a matter of minutes, all because it leveraged the security flaw that had been patched 9 or 10 months before. And if you were a database administrator back then and you were on vacation, your vacation got canceled right then and there. I mean, that was a nightmare. It was one of the times that CNN actually got those reports right. That was that bad. And if you're not managing your environment, if you don't have something like Config Manager or at least Windows Server Update Services managing and monitoring your patches and deploying them properly, then yeah, you are just begging someone to make your day worse.
Yep, that's great.
Mentioned, by the way, that vCenter Server until version 4.1 had a feature called VUM, which was vCenter Update Manager, which managed patches for operating systems and applications within the virtual machines. And they discontinued that feature with vSphere 5. So while they're telling everybody, hey, here's a memory tax you're going to be paying through the nose, we're going to take away some of the features. Now, I'll be honest, most of the clients have been using Config Manager WSUS to do that anyways, but the functionality for them to take it away, especially after they acquired Shavlik, is very curious.
Yeah, and you're in an interesting spot. You're both VMware certified like I am, but I work for Microsoft. You don't. You're an independent. Give us what are the best features of the current versions of VMware and the best features of Microsoft? How would you answer that one?
Carefully. While I don't work for Microsoft, I actually do have a title with the company. I'm a virtual partner technology advisor for Microsoft Canada. And, you know, vSphere 5 has some great feature functionality. They've got storage migration down pat. They've now got network vMotion as well as storage vMotion. And I know that that's coming in System Center 2012, but it's not there yet. And they've got memory overcommit. They've got 4 or 5 different methodologies of overcommitting your resources. And that's all great. On the other hand, you're paying for these features that the vast majority of people don't really need. I'm not saying they don't want. I'm saying that they don't need them. And I hear people all the time, they say, well, VMware is better than Microsoft because they have XYZ feature. And I said, do you use it? No, but it's
no,
nice that
but
I
they have it. Yeah, it's a checkbox.
This is power management, DPM, gorgeous feature on paper. Oh my God, in a million years, I wouldn't say, okay, I'm going to automate that when things get slow, we are going to consolidate all of my workloads onto one or two or fewer servers and physically shut down the remaining ones and expect that the wake on LAN or the ILO will actually wake them up when things get busier. Oh my God, what happens when they don't wake up?
Yeah.
I sleep through my alarm all the time. So DPM is one of those features that people talk about, and it's great on paper. The videos to watch are fabulous. And I don't see
in production, how many people actually use it? Yeah.
There's that. Same thing for, I mean, there are all sorts of features that are exactly the same like that. Look, DRS clusters, dynamic resource clusters are spectacular. They are absolutely something that everybody needs, but we've got them. Live migration clusters in Hyper-V, we've got that. ESX performance, I just published an article on my blog recently, which was republished on TechNet Canada, which showed the number comparison VMware vSphere 5 or ESX i5 to Hyper-V in Server 8. And yes, we're a few months away from Server 8 release, but we've got them beat on most of the numbers. They talk about Microsoft isn't ready for prime time because they don't have the enterprise scalability. Well, where VMware's limitation is 512 virtual machines per host and Server 8 is 1,024, and where they're limiting you to a 2 terabyte VMDK file or a virtual hard disk file, which you can increase using Extents, but they recommend you don't use Extents in production. And we're using, with the new VHDX file format, we're going to expand, blow out of the water with a 64 terabyte VHDX file. 64 terabytes. I don't know what I'm going to do with a 64 terabyte hard drive.
I need a bigger laptop. I know that.
Exactly. So, and there's another feature that I don't like about VMware. If you're not installing on their certified and approved hardware, it will not install. They installed in 4.0, but 4.1 and 5.0, it blocks. So I do a lot of customer demos. And dude, I traveled to 67 cities in 6 countries last year. I did this all on laptops. If I was doing it on VMware instead of Hyper-V, I would have had to carry a rack mount server with me in order to do these demos.
Because they don't certify the laptops.
Well, you do it back at the office. You do it remotely. If you're in the Bogota office of Hewlett-Packard and their internet goes down, which is exactly what happened to me. Your internet's down and you're trying to tell jokes and it doesn't work because they only speak Spanish. So Microsoft, the greatest feature functionality of Microsoft, forget the numbers, forget about the fact that we have greater penetration, greater hardware availability. The fact that I can install everything on my laptop and take that demo to go. And why? Because it's the Windows kernel. The kernel of Hyper-V is the Windows kernel, whether it's 2008 R2 or Server 8. And that means if you can install one, you can install the other. That means, more importantly, if there's a driver for one, there's a driver for the other. How about that? I can now do everything I want on my laptop, demoing Hyper-V and my system center. And for my VMware, I've got to hope that my remote connection to my office at SWMI Consulting Group works.
Yep. That's so true. So just briefly, you've taken the certifications on both sides. How did their certification process compare?
You know, I was lucky because there was a international trading company that rhymes with Lobel Blowledge that wanted to sponsor me to become a VMware certified instructor. And I'm not going to go through the whole story, but they
because you have to sit the class for theirs first, right? Before you can, and not just it's not just taking the test.
You can't even register for the exam, or maybe you can now register for the exam, but even if you pass it with flying colors, with a 500, which is a perfect score, until you've sat their ICM class, install, configure, manage class, or their fast track class, you can't be certified. Now with Microsoft, you can sit the class. You know what? My favorite class in the world to teach is 10 to 15A. It's the planning, implementing, and supporting a virtualization infrastructure on Microsoft technologies. That is really not the name of the title, but 10.2.15a is right. And if you want to sit the class, I'd be glad to have you. But if you don't have time to sit the class, there's an e-learning class for Microsoft Learning. It's 10.2.15AE. And the on-screen presenter is a very handsome Canadian man who looked a lot heavier than he does today. You know what? I got a LinkedIn request from somebody from like 50 miles outside of Detroit a couple of weeks ago named Aaron. Aaron Finch said to me, I'd like to be your friend. And I said, Aaron, with all due respect, I've never heard your name. Where do I know you from? He said, you know what? I've never met you before, but I saw you on LinkedIn. I wanted to take a chance. I am taking your e-learning course on Microsoft Learning on virtualization, and I'm loving it, and I was hoping that I could reach out to you for questions.
Oh, that's
I
great.
Said, it's my pleasure. Please feel free to email me your questions. Well, he didn't have a whole lot of questions, but this morning I got an email from him. It was another LinkedIn message saying, Mitch, I wanted to let you know, thank you so much. I passed my exam today.
Oh, that's great.
So he didn't have to sit a class for 5 days and $4,000. He took a class on his time frame, and I think the online course is $190. But you know what? Some people don't want to take the class for $190. Some people want to play and learn. Some people want to read from a book. Some people just know it because they learned a previous version or they've been doing it for years in their organization. Microsoft gives you so many flexible options to get certified, and the way you're going to get certified is up to you. No matter how you want to prepare for the exam, that's up to you as long as you score a 700 or better on the exam. With VMware, you know what? I was very glad that I passed my upgrade exam, but if I hadn't, I would have had to take the course again or stop saying, hey, I'm VMware certified.
Yeah, it was very different. I've probably gotten 40 different Microsoft certifications over the years, and it was basically go take the test. If you want to sit the class, great.
Sure.
Anybody can go take the test that wants to pay the fee. And you know, this VMware process was new to me, so I signed up, had to sit the class, and I won't name the name of the training provider, but they, you know, had to they sent me this email, wanted to know, make sure I was a U.S. citizen and wasn't going to export this knowledge. It was almost like a background check. And then I went and signed up to take the test. And they wanted to take my photo ID. And so on my test results, it's really interesting. They have a picture of who took the test. Obviously, it was me, but a very different process than the Microsoft exams are. So
I am going to tell you, that is one thing that I wish Microsoft would do.
Yeah. That's
you
neat. I mean, yeah.
How many people do we know, have we heard of, who are MCSEs, MCITPs, who couldn't administer their way out of a paper bag?
Yep.
And because somebody in China took the test for them. I think that's something that.
Yep. We may have to go to that point, but that's really cool. So I know you don't have the total crystal ball, but where do you see all this going? What's the futures, the roadmaps for VMware versus Microsoft and all this virtualization stuff?
I should say I have a crystal water mug. Does that come close? So let me look into it. And if we look,
what does
closely,
it tell you?
It says Microsoft MVP. Which tells me that in the future of virtualization is Microsoft. VMware, in my educated opinion, has shot themselves in the foot over the last year. You know, 2 years ago, I did a presentation at Tech Days Canada called Microsoft Virtualization for the VMware Administrator. And it was met with, I mean, the worst evals I've ever gotten because I was speaking to a VMware-friendly audience. And the entire group of them were like, how dare you say Microsoft virtualization could ever be as good as VMware? How dare you? We won't think about that. It's heresy. Well, in August of last year, VMware announced what we nicely call the memory tax, or affectionately call the memory tax, where they're no longer charged, where they're telling you, hey, if you've got memory committed, that's what you're paying based on. And I see companies and municipalities and governments who, I was talking to somebody a few weeks ago that their bill for VMware, and by the way, this is a company that VMware told them 3 months before the memory commitment pricing was introduced, VMware said, yeah, throw a ton of RAM into that machine and overcommit it, and you want to have If you have a terabyte of RAM, you could overcommit it to 2 terabytes of RAM. And this isn't the consultant. This is VMware proper telling them to do that. And then all of a sudden, wait, what? Are you telling me that you're now charging me for RAM usage? And all of a sudden, you have a whole bunch of people who have been drinking the VMware Kool-Aid for so many years saying, well, you know what? It's time for me to look at Microsoft because my bill, my yearly support costs just went from $11,000 to $98,000. That's not an insignificant jump. And VMware said, you know what? We're going to make some concessions. We're going to max out. If you dedicate anything over 96, it's either 92 or 96 gigabytes of RAM to a virtual machine, that's the maximum. We're only going to make you one $5,000 license per virtual machine. What? Really? But we can do it for free over there. I mean, Microsoft is getting better and better. And you know what? If we'd had this conversation 18 months ago, I couldn't with good conscience have said Microsoft hypervisor is as good as VMware's hypervisor. But right now they are, and they're even surpassing them in some ways. And VMware is ignoring that. VMware has lost touch with its client base and is increasing the price, not just increasing, I'm blowing it out of the water, increasing, while Microsoft is still saying, yeah, we're going to let you do it for the basic virtualization for free and the system center tools that you're going to pay for, but that's the management experience. And it's still going to cost you less than going with our competitors. VMware doesn't recognize that. And VMware, I think, has lost touch with the reality that, oh my God, there is another player on the market. For years, they were the only ones, and they've acted like it. Well, they're not the only game in town anymore, and they're going to pay for it. And they're going to see it in the loyalty of the VMware administrators who are going to switch over to Hyper-V.
So that's great, Mitch, and I really appreciate you. We're about running out of time here today, and I always get asked for contact information for my guest on the Community Corner here on TechNet Radio. So first, let me give my information. If you want to email me, it's john.weston@microsoft.com. My primary blog's out there at blogs.technet.com/jweston. And if you want to download System Center 2012, right, as Mitch mentioned, 2012 is not quite out yet. We're at release candidate stage. I've got a real short URL, aka.ms/syscntr, as my website that can get you downloaded all the stuff you want to learn about System Center 2012. So, Mitch, you want to give us your blog or contact information?
Well, first of all, I'm with SWMI Consulting Group. I should mention swmi.ca. And I'm on a speaking tour right now, and if you are going to be in, for example, Saskatoon on Thursday or Montreal next Wednesday, I'd love to have you come out and check me out at swmi.ca. My blog is at garvis.ca, and that's Canada, but not California. Our economy is better. And, of course, you can follow me on Twitter at Mitch Garvis. Oh, sorry, at M. Garvis.
I forgot to mention I'm on Twitter as well, known as TechNet Guy. Well, great. I sure appreciate you joining us today, and let's have you back. This has been so much fun. Maybe we'll do this again next month. Thanks.
I look forward to it. Thanks, John.
Thanks, Mitch.